This is On Location. I'm Tim Leitner. Today's program comes to you on location from Franklin County, Columbus, Ohio. But first, On Location is produced by the NCA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, Breaker, iHeartRadio, and Radio Public, among others. So subscribe today on your favorite podcast service and tell all your friends. On today's episode, join Brandy Gallebo of Franklin County Child Support Enforcement Agency as she hosts a conversation with Susan Brown, Director of Franklin County CSCA. Learn about Susan's history and background in the child support program spanning over the past 27 years. Listen as she shares her thoughts with the NCA community and transitioning from enforcement to engagement. Brandy and Susan talk about the grants that Franklin County has received, along with resources to analyze and dig deeper into the impact that policies and practices have on their residents. Get to know Susan, as she also shares her hobbies and interests outside of the Child Support Office. It's going to be a great show, so stick around, and we'll be right back.
Hello, and welcome to the next episode of On Location with NCIA. Today, we are going to talk about how the changing perspectives of the child support program are changing the way we provide services to the parents we serve. My name is Brandy Gallebo, and I'm joined today with Susan Brown, Director of Franklin County Child Support Enforcement Agency in Columbus, Ohio. She recently presented at WCSIC in Portland, Oregon, at a workshop entitled Becoming an Ally Instead of an Adversary with Michelle Franco, Christy Nichols, and Aniqua Weaver. Susan, before we get into our discussion today, please tell us about yourself and your history in the child support program.
Well, hello, everyone. First, thank you, Brandy, for inviting me to share my thoughts with the NCIA community. My background with the child support program is history in that I've been with the program for a very long time. My career outside of the child support program began as an attorney in private practice, specializing in family law and criminal defense work. I became the administrator for the child support program in Lawrence County, Ohio in 1997. It's a medium-sized county. I learned all about the program there because in a smaller county, you wear multiple hats and cover multiple roles. From there, I became the director of two other medium-sized counties, Athens and Delaware, and in 2007, I became the director of Franklin County CSEA, a metro county in Columbus, Ohio. I've been in Franklin County for 17 years now, and I've been in the program 27 years.
Thank you. What a rich history that you have. And what is one fun fact that you would like to share with our listeners?
Fun fact. Okay. Well, I can think of a couple of things. One of my hobbies is road biking. And although I don't ride as often and far anymore, in 2015, I rode 5 century rides, which are 100-mile rides. Most of those rides occurred in the beautiful scenic areas of Kentucky. I also love the outdoors and hiking and spend most of my vacation time in the fall in the Canaan Valley area of West Virginia, which is located on a high plateau in the Allegheny Mountains. Also, my family roots are in that area.
That's awesome. Personally, I prefer 2 feet on the ground, so completing all of those 100-mile rides is impressive. Now let's get into our discussion. At Franklin County, I know that we have participated in several grants to learn how to do our job better. Please briefly tell us about those grants and what did our team learn the most from that work?
Thank you, Brandy. Our agency has participated in a number of grants, and our program has evolved tremendously over the past 30 years. There's a quote that I often use when talking about the history and evolution of our program with staff. The quote is, "I did then what I know how to do. Now that I know better, I do better," by Maya Angelou. Grants have provided our program with the resources to analyze and dig deeper into the impact that our policies and practices have on our residents, especially our low-income residents. Although we participated in a grant before this, our real education in grants, I believe, started in 2012 when Kim Newsom, who at the time was the executive director of our Ohio Child Support Directors Association, and I attended the Behavioral Economics and Human Services, a peer practicum held in Washington, D.C. on July 16th and 17th in 2012, as part of the Behavioral Interventions to Advance Self-Sufficiency Project, or BIAS, sponsored by the Office of Planning, Research and Evaluation, Administration for Children and Families, the social research firm of MDRC, and Ideas 42. This was our first introduction to the world of behavioral economics, and which taught us the basic skills of creating a random control trial and taught us the behavioral diagnosis and design model. It also sparked a new age of thinking about the reasons behind why our residents don't participate in the programs that we believed would be of most benefit to them, and even more importantly, to evaluate why we engage in processes that we do, looking at our processes from the viewpoint of our residents and how our processes impact our residents utilizing data to guide our decisions. BIAS was our primer, our first behavioral economics grant, which studied the impact of providing written monthly payment notices and reminders to residents. The findings weren't significant, but the lessons learned were tremendous. Our second grant dug in a little deeper into the core issues behind our residents' ability to pay and focused on setting appropriate orders. It was called BICS, or Behavioral Interventions in Child Support. And through BICS, we revised our review and adjustment or modification process. This grant again taught us how important it is to use data to evaluate our work and in the design of new models to map out our current processes to find out where the psychological drop-off points lie, and that by simplifying our review process and forms, along with providing intensive case management, we can increase the number of residents who actually receive a modification by 30%. Going even further into our study and analysis of data, our next grant was entitled Procedural Justice Informed Alternatives to Contempt, or PJAC. And this grant was a random control trial that studied the impact of using principles of procedural justice, which are respect, helpfulness, understanding, voice, and neutrality, along with other supports and services to improve the payment of child support by obligors who are otherwise eligible for contempt of court due to noncompliance with their child support order. This grant was of huge consequence to our program and opened our eyes to data that revealed the overrepresentation of African-American and low-income obligors within our judicial contempt process. And as a result, the agency is providing more supportive services to our residents earlier on in the child support pipeline to stop the flow of low-income cases being referred for judicial contempt or even worse, criminal non-support. We have two more grants which we're participating. The Safe Access for Victims Economic Security, or SAVES, program, and the Charting a Course for Economic Mobility and Responsible Parenting Grant, or EMRP. SAVES is a new national demonstration model designed to develop, evaluate, and implement best practices to provide safe access to child support services. The SAVES demonstration provides funding for the development of comprehensive domestic violence safety policies, procedures, and outreach activities to increase access to child support services for parents not currently receiving child support due to their safety concerns. One primary reason given by domestic violence survivors for staying with or returning to an abusive partner is financial dependence. When received, Child support is a primary source of income for custodial families. SAVES plays a key role in enhancing safety, economic stability, and helping survivors leave and stay away from an abusive relationship. Finally, the EMRP grant provides funding to educate teens and young adults about the legal, financial, and emotional responsibilities of parenting through peer educators to motivate teens and young adults to postpone parenthood until they have completed their education, started a career, and entered a healthy, committed relationship. The program provides resources and opportunities to young parents with non-marital births that will assist in achieving economic stability, gain a meaningful work experience, and learn how to successfully co-parent. All of these grants have provided our agency with scientific ways to evaluate our program, and they have provided us with a wealth of data, information, and process improvement. The grants have driven our priority, our resources, and have contributed to the human-centered case management and growth that we now have within our program.
How are you, and how would our listeners be able to implement some of the things you've learned in their work, and what data have you reviewed to determine the effectiveness of the changes?
So if the listeners are interested in implementing any of these practices, I highly recommend going to the HHS, Administration for Children and Families, Office of Child Support Services website and hit the Grants tab. From there, you can select current or past grants and view all of the reports that contain the process flows, document changes, case management techniques, scripts, findings, and a wealth of rich data from these grants. Implementation of grant work, as you know, is not as easy as you may think. But as we've learned, mapping out the process, developing all of your documents and your scripts and forms, and having a good project management plan is key to staying on task. Communication of the overall goal and the why to staff is also critical. The data we reviewed to determine the effectiveness of the changes are all in the grant reports on the OCSS website. Some of our results didn't show a significant impact on all evaluation measures. However, that information is just as important as our successes. There's another quote that comes from our friends at the social research firm of MDRC, and that is, all data is good data. Sometimes we do need to pivot based on an evaluation result, and sometimes it's enough that our residents now find that we're providing better services and believe that we care about them. And that relationship change alone, in time, will improve performance.
I know you touched on this at WCSIC, but how are you bringing the change to your agency from enforcement to engagement? What are some of the barriers you and your staff have encountered? And how are you overcoming barriers your staff is having with this change in perspective?
First, there must be an understanding that traditional enforcement techniques will not work for all cases. For low-income cases, the provision of services is more important than enforcement. The culture of an agency must change, and here are a few tips. Create a culture within your organization that prioritizes the needs and experiences of the parents within your caseloads. Create a customer-centric culture. Encourage empathy, active listening, and a commitment to finding mutually beneficial solutions. Provide positive reinforcement to the residents. Focus on the residents' aspirations and what is getting in their way rather than on their deficits or weaknesses. Staff have to believe in the principles of procedural justice. The concept that motivation and willingness come when there exists common goals between the case manager and the parent. As the April 2023 NCIA Communique Building Relationships article explained, research shows that most parents want to support their children, and if staff positively engage the parents in helping them to overcome challenges that are getting in their way to reaching their economic goals, and again, tap into the parents' motivation and aspirations, the interactions between them will become more productive and lead to positive outcomes. Other areas to consider are that visuals and terminology matter. We had advocacy group talk to us about the offensiveness of our website, such as paying parent always depicts as male, and the term absent parent is offensive. Also, opportunities for voice and participation using advocacy groups, surveys, roundtable discussions, and ensuring that program participants are included as the architects of our processes. It's important to provide timely and transparent information to parents, accessible and user-friendly systems to ensure multiple avenues for communication, engage in proactive case management, and training and education for both the public and the staff is very important. Some of the challenges we face in changing business practices are having the bandwidth to adequately communicate our findings and to provide staff with all the tools that they need to be successful, such as staffing, all the behavioral science training required, the ability to analyze current processes and the data, and the staff for project management. And another point, as Sir Isaac Newton's law of inertia states, a body at rest tends to remain at rest. A body in motion tends to stay in motion. Bodies will continue in their current state, whether at rest or in motion, unless acted upon by a greater outside force. And this applies to the tendency of people, having once established a way of doing things or a habit, to continue that course unless acted on by a greater force. Seeing people in this dynamic perspective completely changes the understanding of what it takes to bring change to the direction of people's thinking. To change the culture and mindset of an organization, there must be a big nudge or an aha moment, a motivation, a social cause, a personal experience, or another compelling reason to change. And it's up to our leaders, our managers, our future leaders, our supervisors to create the inspiration, the movement, the motivation, and the incentive to serve our residents in a different way. Organizational change is top down and bottom up, and more of our staff are taking on the role of change agents as they see the need for transformation in our program as a moral imperative.
So it sounds like the agency has been learning and changing from these grant projects for a while. When do you think you'll be done? When do you think you can say, we did it?
Done? If we stop learning, we stop growing. We will never be done. There will always be ways that we can improve the program. And the best that we can do is to continuously move forward, as there will always be demographic, economic, health, and other internal and external factors that give rise to the need for program adaptation.
Very true. Thank you. Reaching our residents and parents, that is in our community, in an effective way is another focus on changing our perspective in how we do the work. What is the demographics in Franklin County that you have found to be the most in need or the ones that need reached? How do these evolving areas of focus affect the different demographic groups in the program?
Well, Franklin County demographics, Franklin County has a population of 1.3 million people with a median age of 34.4 years and a median household income of $71,000. The five largest ethnic groups in Franklin County are white at 65%, Black or African American at 24%, Asian at 6%, Hispanic or Latino at 6%, and two or more races at 3.6%. Franklin County also has a 15.1% poverty rate. For child support purposes, 10 of our most impoverished zip code areas hold over 58% of all child support debt, or around $200 million. And generally, these parents earn less than $10,000 a year. Our PJAC data is representative of our residents in most need, as these are our non-paying cases. As reported in the study's findings, most non-custodial parents in the PJAC study had low reported incomes. Just over half were formerly employed in the year before their enrollment into the study, earning about $5,000 in the last year. 90% were identified as male, 62% were identified as Black or Hispanic. The demographics of non-custodial parents in PJAC have important implications for for thinking about their prior experiences with the child support program, employment, and law enforcement. Men of color, who make up the majority of non-custodial parents in PJAG and in our program, generally face higher rates of discrimination in the labor market and criminal legal system. Additionally, a higher percentage of Black and Hispanic men experience unemployment or underemployment. The data that has come out of the PJAG study has opened our eyes to be self-reflective and prompted us to ask, what is the impact that our policies and processes are having on our families? Are we providing a benefit, or are we more of a detriment to families? It has provided a catalyst for Franklin County to begin analyzing other caseload data to determine the impact that our enforcement techniques have on our families. For example, orders set at $200 to $300 a month are cases which are, on average, most likely to be referred for enforcement actions, such as contempt, criminal non-support, and have the most accumulation of debt. In analyzing these cases, we found that when the parent pays, the payment is voluntary, leading us to believe that the parent wants to pay but is struggling to pay. This is leading us to see the value in early engagement and in providing more information to parents at the front end of their case and engaging in targeted case management to provide supports to these families so that 10 years later, they're not facing civil contempt or worse, criminal non-support.
This has been a great conversation, but I have one last question. What is one last thought you would like to leave us?
I guess my one piece of advice would be to keep an open mind to new ideas and new concept. Understand that our history doesn't have to continue to define us, and above all, to treat people with respect and humanity. Everyone has a different story.
Thank you, Susan, for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk about the changing perspectives in child support and how it's affecting the parents we serve and how we can make a difference every day. On behalf of the NCIA Communications Committee, Susan Brown, and myself, thank you for listening to On Location, and be sure to tune in next week for another thought-provoking podcast.
On Location is available on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and anywhere you get your podcasts. We have a lot of great episodes on the way, so be sure to subscribe and listen to all of our previous episodes as well. We also appreciate your ratings, your feedback, your comments, and your suggestions. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us on the contact link on our website. On Location is a production of the NCIA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. Thanks again for joining me. I'm Tim Leitner, and this has been On Location.